Yeah, thank you very much, Johannes. Thanks for coming. So the topic of my talk is, as you can see in this rather long and awkward title, data mining / fiction, automatic text analysis of patterns in homoerotic amateur science fiction stories. Just a few words that I think... Closer. Obviously, English is not my native language, so bear with me if I make any mistakes. But you can ask questions if I become totally not understandable. So next slide. This is going to be interesting because there are interactive parts in this presentation and kind of like doing a blind flight maneuver here. So there's just one person on stage today, which is me. But there are two people behind this presentation, and for personal reasons, which I regret very much, the person I collaborated with cannot be here. She couldn't make it across the ocean to San Francisco. She's Svenja Schröder. She's currently studying for a PhD in computer science at the University of Duisburg, and also she's a very, very awesome DJ at the finest queer party they have in the Ruhr area in Western Germany. If you are there in Germany, in the West, on the first Friday of a month, you should stop by and you will enjoy lots of nice electronica, kitschy favorites of the queer scenes, and the occasional Rickrolling and Katamari soundtrack. So she helped a lot with her expertise in social network analysis, which she is writing her PhD thesis on at the moment. And then, also presenting is me. I'm an activist with the Chaos Computer Club for 18 years now. That's a scary number for me when I wrote that down. I don't have any academic title to brag with, but I've always been interested in literature and computers and the intersections of both. One of the first things I did with Monochrome was Robo Exotica last year, the International Festival of Cocktail Robotics, where cocktails are displayed that where robots are displayed that can mix cocktails or somehow mechanically aid in binge drinking or what you have. And there was also a symposium with that called The Ghost and the Machine. And for some reason or the other, Johannes decided, he didn't even ask me, he decided I should speak there. And I didn't know what to come up with, but finally I thought, well, now we have robots that help in the human pastime of drinking. Maybe we should have something about machines generating literature so humans don't have to eventually. And so I gave a talk on that. And I work as a software developer. So next slide, please. Just a few words on / fiction. What surprised me when I talked about this topic with various people was how the knowledge on the topic differs. For instance, since I arrived here in San Francisco, all I had to say is, I'm doing a little data visualization on / fiction, and everyone was like, cool. And when I mentioned that back in Germany, no one really knew what to say about the term / fiction. So the title of my talk actually has a little definition of it, but to every rule there's an exception. So I will get into that a bit more. But as a working definition, I think we can say it is all about amateur homoerotic stories about mostly male character in mostly science fiction series. So there are obviously slash fiction stories that are not about male-male pairings, but also about female-female pairings, but it has to be homoerotic. Some of it is romantic, some of it is pornographic, some of it is of very high literal quality, if you want to apply that debatable terms, and some of it is just, you know, a few lines of smut written up. So it's very hard, yeah, to nail it down, but it goes around that theme. So while we were working on the code for visualizing that data, Svenja and I stopped by at a friend and a Chinese friend of ours, Chao, from just emigrated to Germany from China, and he asked us what we were working on. And we said, yeah, you know, it's about gay characters having sex in a science fiction setting. And he said, that sounds pretty hot. What science fiction? So that was probably the most interesting reaction I got, because most people stopped at this homoerotic part. And we kind of did a lot of hand-waving and mumbling about, you know, stories where people travel in spaceships, but sometimes it's not even with space, but in the future, but it doesn't have to be in the future, and yeah, interesting. So, one thing that may be very trivial to most of you, if you are familiar with the term slash fiction, but somehow surprised me, was that the majority of these stories, if not, if it's not the norm even, majority of these stories are written by and for heterosexual women. So, we have a corpus of literature here that is almost always produced by heterosexual women for heterosexual women. And, of course, most of these stories play in a science fiction setting, but it doesn't necessarily have to be science fiction. That was another thing that surprised me when I did some research on it. And the links to the science fiction fandom subculture, they are there, but they are not as strong as one might expect. Something like the Big Bang of slash fiction happened in 1966 when the television show Star Trek was first shown, and people, women, started to write stories about the characters. There has always been fan fiction, people exploring the social settings, the ideas, the technology in a universe of a science fiction setting of a specific science fiction universe created. But what was special about slash fiction was that it focused mainly on the characters. So these writers were not, of course they were interested in all the shiny devices shown in the show, but it was not the main point. The main point was, you know, hot boys doing hot stuff. And while that thing started in 1966, it didn't get a large exposure, mainly underground fanzines published these things, and there was a huge controversy about whether it should be accepted as a real part of science fiction fandom, or as if these writers were not, as one critic from the science fiction fandom subculture put it, just godless pornographers. And what also surprised me was, yes, we all know about Star Trek slash fiction, and actually the name slash fiction comes from Star Trek, because the main pairing in a slash fiction story was often abbreviated as say Kirk/Spock, and then from that /fiction came. But as I said, it's not necessarily science fiction. While the Big Bang of slash fiction happened with the airing of the Star Trek TV show, the next big wave of slash fiction stories came with Starsky and Hutch. So there's a lot of that as well. But we will not consider that because this is a conference about science fiction and sex. And of course, in the 1990s, slash fiction moved to the web. I find it very interesting. This is what we're talking about here is it's a piece of illegal art. Due to copyright issues, it can never be published by a big publisher, by a conventional publishing house. It always has to stay in the underground, fan scenes that were photocopied in the 60s and 70s, and now has to be found on websites, maybe not even on a big website with a domain name registered to a certain person, but you will find a lot of that stuff in, say, LiveJournal or in somewhat hard to find collections that are available on the net. Okay, I think it's time for the next slide. So when you're talking about literature or a genre of literature, your first approach might be to apply literary criticism to that. So if we want to categorize slash fiction and want to have maybe visualize it mentally and want to see some pretty pictures and have categories of it, we should maybe first look to literary criticism. So there are basically two approaches. You could talk hours and hours about that, but two approaches I will focus on. One is the findings mainly in the German and American research community, which focuses on things like what we call in German Motive, and in the American research community you talk about themes. So what are the constituents of a literary text? What are, so to say, the blanks that you fill out in your boilerplate so a literary text will emerge? And themes or motives in German could be motives like honor, revenge, limitation, liberty, stuff like that. So you see, there is an idea of how to categorize these reoccurring themes and maybe build categories for stories that you can then use for visualizing, but it's rather vague. When we look at something like honor, that's something that strikes me as pretty concrete, whereas a concept like limitation, liberty is more abstract to that. So I would say it would be more practical to introduce more categories to that, or maybe do away with this whole theme, motive, categorization thing. So, and you could also think of like Ur stories, original stories, that would be characterized as themes in the American terminology, where you talk about themes like the story of Arcadia, the story of Pact with the Devil, the comic hero, a rebellion, time, and again, I think this is you have the idea of time, which is pretty abstract, and then you have a motive like Pact with the Devil, which almost is like the content of a story itself. So I think this is just too vague to work with. And next slide, please. The French approach to that is having three terms. One is meat. So it's a mythology that is built around a recurring hero and is filled with new meaning by the author. This is pretty much like how television series work nowadays. You have a recurring hero and a new meaning is attached to that, and thus a mythology is created. And you have a motive, which is a type or concept. So this is pretty much what we saw on the slide before. And then we have something called theme, which is, in computer speak, the implementation of that motive. Or, as you say in French, le motif introduit à la généralité du thème. Okay, so that was our first approach at looking at the corpus of slash fiction, and there's a problem with it, which we will see on the next slide. So this is a comic from the XKCD series. I will let you read through it. I think I'm pretty much the guy in the last panel. So, being computer nerds, we thought maybe with all these vagueness and all these, you know, fine art terms and literary criticism, why not learn from what you know? Why not just write code? And so that was the approach that we took. Next slide, please. We turn to network analysis. What we know now and what we have tools for is SNA, social network analysis. This is what you do when you data mine popular social networking services, for instance. This is what evil people do when they data mine telephone conversations. It's all about building a graph of who knows whom. And we thought text coming from the Latin textulus, so interwoving something, could be seen as a social network of sorts. But it's not people having relationships to each other, but words having relationships to each other, because they are mentioned in a certain window size, within a certain window size. So we can pretty much map these terminology from social network analysis on text analysis here. With network analysis, we can detect the relationship between and among words and themes. And we can say something about quantitative characteristics of textual data. So, how will we do that? Next slide, please. So concepts in our story become equivalent to nodes in social network analysis. And the link between two concepts is called a statement, and that corresponds with an edge in social network analysis. And the union of all statements per text forms a map. So that was basically our approach, which we used to create some pretty pictures with. So next slide, I think. Yeah. What we wanted to do is some visualization of data. And when doing data visualization, you always end up with seven steps. And some of these steps you can group together. The first step is to acquire the data. Then you have to parse it, filter out data that is meaningless, then you have to mine it for relationships, then you have to think about a representation of it. Next step would be to refine it, to make more meaningful representation, and then maybe add a step of interaction. This is not what I came up with. This is basically written down in the literature, as we say, there's a wonderful book called Visualizing Data by Ben Fry, which talks about all that. So, next slide, please. The first problem we had was acquiring a corpus, and we had grand plans about that. We wanted to acquire the definitive, comprehensive corpus of slash fiction, and we failed miserably. So, what we ended up with, totally scientific, I know, we randomly picked stories from the web, and as far as I know now, it is probably impossible to collect the comprehensive corpus of slash fiction. As I mentioned before, it differs so much in quality, in length, and there's all these gray area stuff, whether to include that story as slash fiction, like what happens if a famous author writes slash fiction, is that still amateur story, or will it fall out of that definition, and so on and so on. And also there were time constraints, so yeah, this is pretty much what we came up with. We just picked some random stories that all had to do with Kirk and Spock having some romantic or sexual interest in each other. I also did some last-minute work on something that looks like a very comprehensive collection of Doctor Who slash fiction, but frankly, it's too broken to show. I would be ashamed to show the results at that point, so this is pretty much work in progress. So, acquisition. Somewhat of a failure, but let's see the next point. Oh yeah. Could you stop the presentation and just... So we worked with processing here. Could you go to the tab that says slash up, which is the main program? So just to give you an idea what it looks like, maybe... yeah. What we do here is checking for step words. I will get into that later. And then build an object, a stack of words, which are then used to generate the edges and nodes in the social network. I think we can go back to the presentation now. Okay, for the parsing, we had to decide what makes a word in slash fiction. So the significant line is around here. So this is basically what we saw a word looked like. Anything that is not a dash or some kind of quotation character or a comma or a full stop or an exclamation mark or a question mark, or carriage return or line feed. So this is how we split the stuff for parsing. Next, we had to filter. What we're doing here is checking against a list of stop words. We had acquired a list of stop words in the English language, which are just too insignificant to tell us something about the social network. So these would be words like I, is, the. So we wanted to filter these words out. This is done here. And that wonderful loop. Yeah. Can we look at the code again? So you can also see that you have the shiny device, right? There is a line which says at the edges. Yeah. And then you see a loop. And then I will get to that later. But one idea we had was using word stems. To normalize the words to their linguistic stem. So And for a number of reasons that didn't make things clearer, which you will see in a moment. So back to the presentation. Next slide. Oh yeah, we'll have a look at the results now. Can you go back to processing? And yeah, the play button. So this is a social network of SMUT dealing with Captain Kirk and Spock having romantic and sexual relationships. I would really love to interact with that now, but you can drag the nodes around and see how they are related. And you can see also some of the problems that we should work on with refining that. For instance, I don't see it now, but there is somewhere in the network should be a node called T, and there's also show it. And I think that node should be more closely connected to another node called begging. So maybe this is not the representation that makes connections in the story much clearer. The Spock node, yeah, it's pretty central to the network, and I think it should be down there somewhere. I can see the Kirk node, which is connected to a lot of the words. Okay, yeah, resolution is not that great. And also, yeah, I think the network should have a clearer concept of that the Captain node is really, really close to the Kirk node, something like that. And then you can see a node over there, and this is one of the points why stemming didn't work so well. Because this is a word that you really want to have in the plural. You don't want to reduce it to its normal form of the singular. Yeah, it would be in the form that you would find the word as a dictionary entry. So skip taking off ing and taking off the plural forms and so on. So can we go back to the presentation? So we had a look at the results. And so the first approach we had was stemming, which didn't work well for a number of reasons. We will see that in a moment. And we also pondered a possible second approach for refining it, using a framework for computational linguistics called WordNet. And what I wanted to implement was looking at synonyms, and I just learned this word, holonyms. What is a holonym? A holonym is a word that another word is a part of. So, for instance, various body parts would have the holonym body. So I thought maybe taking all nouns that have the holonym body and then looking up the first synonym for that and normalizing it to the first synonym would give us a clearer idea about concepts and how they are related in that story. So let's say cock and dick would all be reduced to the concept of penis. For some reasons that didn't work out. I used the official library for WordNet. I tried two, and they all turned out to be horribly broken. Just during the keynote, I tried to fix it, but doesn't work. And all I end up with is null pointer, a pointer, exceptions, etc., etc. So we cannot see that refinement. But as I mentioned, this is still work in progress. So maybe at the end of the year, at the Chaos Communication Congress, the yearly event we have in Berlin, where we will definitely try to present our findings again. you will see something like that. I think this is an approach we should look into. So the first approach we did was stemming. Can you go back to, or just go to the next slide and then go back to processing? Yes. So what we used here was, there's a tab called Porter Stemmer. And just go through that. When I showed that code to someone just the other day, he said, this surely is machine-generated code. It is. It is, I think it came originally from C. And then, I wrote a little program so I could use it in processing, because programs that write other programs are the happiest programs on Earth. So it basically, it does a lot of chopping off and trying to normalize words. And because this is the algorithm that is used in the literature, which means people much smarter than I am have written papers on it, which I skimmed. I tried to use this one, but it turned out to be not such a great idea. Can you go back to the tab that says slash up? Yes, and this is going to be interesting. You're on the right line. Just go down one line. Thank you. That line is commented out. Can you comment it in? Thank you very much. And can you now stop the program first, the applet? Can you now run it again? So this is how the network would look like if we reduced it. And I think it becomes even less clear than what we had before. And also, for some reason, a lot of time it didn't work. It didn't reduce all the plural forms, etc., etc. So I think stemming was probably not the right approach to it. Okay, can we go back to the presentation? Unless you want to play with it some more. Next slide, please. So these are my conclusions. This is, as I mentioned, 11 million times already. This is work in progress. But we think that social network analysis and literary text at least make pretty pictures. And I think we can find something about concepts in literature by using social network analysis. And collecting a corpus is hard, especially if you don't have enough time planned for that. That's it. Next slide. I don't know if you have time for questions, but if so, please ask me.
Okay. I hope you will be able to present the results of your researches for next year's Ars Electronica book, I hope. Maybe. So we have one or two questions, but then we have to go on. Anyone interested?
Just maybe if you could explain the graph a little more. So why are words connected on the graph? Are they proximity and distance, or are they mentioned
proximity
in the same text?
And distance, exactly.
Okay, so they're very close together. Like Spock and
we can have variable window sizes. For instance, if the window size that we chose in that example was 5, if a word is up to 5 words away from another word, they are seen as connected.
Is the quantity of relationships represented in the visualization, or all those lines the same? Do you know what I mean?
Not exactly.
Like, it's hard to tell because there are so many lines connecting. But do the weight or anything of the lines change depending on the frequency of those relationships?
The font size. Yeah, the font size could be set in a different... But let me answer that to that. Yeah, what you actually want to do is having the weight of the the connections represented graphically. What we have here, we just add edges, and we don't look up if we have added this edge before. So we get a representation of the weight, so to say, by having many connections. What I'm doing is I'm stepping through the text, extracting all the words, and then trying to make up connections between the words.
And you're making the connections between the words based on using WordNet as your
I try to use WordNet, but WordNet and myself, I think we will stay friends, but it just didn't seem to work out.
Okay.
Okay. I guess we have to go to the next presentation. A big applause for Jens Olig and his researches.